What's up, everybody? September 18th, 2024 episode of Scott Speaks coming at you this week. Even though Todd is back from China, I've got some traveling to do, so we're not going to be able to record until next week for the two of us. So at that point in time, you'll get all the updates on Todd's trip to China, as well as whatever the hell else we want to talk about. But this is going to sound like a weird topic, even though it really isn't. 1 week ago was September 11th, 2024. And I don't know that I or Todd and I have ever spoken about 9/11 on this show. I mean, look at this is typically a, good time party show. We're not out here trying to bring anybody down, but when you think about 9/11, it's not just that it was a horrible tragedy for the United States and the you know where you were when type thing for my generation, but it's again, this year was the 23rd year since it happened. I imagine maybe in 2 years there'll be some sort of larger deal made about it. I certainly know that September 11th, 2002 was a giant deal, like wall-to-wall news coverage that whole day. September 11th, 2011, I seem to remember, got some pretty big traction. I don't know that September 11th, 2021 did. I really don't remember that, the 20th anniversary. It even sounds weird saying the anniversary. Anniversaries are supposed to be celebrations, right? Anniversaries are supposed to be things that you're happy and you look forward to. Wedding anniversaries. Again, I've been in this happy relationship for so many years. Let's celebrate it. That's not something you want to celebrate, but by the same token, it's not something that you want to forget either, obviously, And honestly, that concept and that ideal is kind of what led me to want to do this today, because I watched, because they've re-aired it multiple times now, right around, whatever episode is closest to the date of 9/11, 60 Minutes airs this special they did where they focus specifically on the FDNY, the New York Fire Department, and the contributions and sacrifices that they made on 9/11. And it's really, really well done. It's the full episode. Obviously, all the segments are, some archival footage. And obviously, they're interviewing some survivors. And then the last segment, they talk to the next generation. So the sons and daughters of some of the people that either actually, perished in 9/11 or were involved with 9/11. And they too are part of the FDNY, which, I'll acknowledge it. I'm a coward. I probably wouldn't be a firefighter, period. But even if I was, and they literally ask this question of people during this story, and they ask it about the people that certainly did this and went back into the towers knowing, after both planes had hit, knowing that their likelihood of survival was very slim. And then most of all, the guys, and I think it was all guys that were literally going in, but certainly women were there to help. But whatever, I'm going to say guys. The guys that went in to what I believe was the North Tower after the South Tower had collapsed. And you're still going in. Now, if you're already in there and you're, hiking up floor after floor after floor, you might not know what had happened to the other tower. Like, let's say you're on the 50th floor and the other tower falls. And you're a firefighter. I don't think they're radioing to those guys, hey, get out of there. Then again, maybe they were. They did touch on that a bit on 60 Minutes. I can't remember, obviously, all the details of it. But the guys that kept going up or went in after the first one fell, are you fucking kidding me? Like, they're both facing the same, the buildings are both facing very similar damage. You have to know that it's a death sentence. You're not going to survive. Now, amazingly, and this is definitely something I wanted to talk about, they do interview, I think it was just two guys, maybe a third, two guys who I believe were on their way up, but they were on like the 12th floor. They weren't that high up. And the tower they were in started collapsing. And they survived. Now they were in a stairwell kind of on the outside of the building, but near the edge of the building. They talked about the whoosh of air coming from underneath them, implying to me, and I haven't taken physics in 25 years plus, but implying to me that the impact of all of the floors above them, obviously it didn't crush them because they survived, but maybe had moved a little to the side and then had hit, and then the wind from the impact pushed them back up. And both of them got thrown and they survived. I don't know that anyone knows the actual stat of how many people either inside or immediately around the base of the towers when they fell, how many survived, in conjunction with everyone that was in the towers. But it's got to be less than 1%. It might be less than 0.1%. of those people. I mean, there were 2,800 total casualties. Did more than 20 people survive that were in those exact scenarios? I can't imagine that they did. But yet there were these guys that were sitting there talking to 60 Minutes and telling their tale about how they got thrown. They felt like, they were saying their prayer. Like, how do you do that? How do you make that decision to do that? But anyway, it's a very, I was actually watching it just a few nights ago, and Jamie came down and she was like, what are you watching? I was like, it's that, cause she'd seen it before. I was like, it's that 60 Minute special where they're talking about the FDNY and everything that I've already said here on this podcast. She was like, why are you watching this? And it's strange to me. I lived through it. I was in LA. I may have told this story on the podcast before. I was living in LA with a pretty crazy roommate who was big on conspiracy theories. He always, statute of limitations has passed. He was growing weed on the roof of the building that we lived in. It's like a 3-story building. And whenever we'd hear a chopper, like a helicopter, which was pretty clearly for like traffic, he thought it was the cops trying to find his weed and take it from him and incarcerate him. Like he was a nut. He was a real nut. But so the morning that it happened, of course in LA, it was very early. It was before 6 a.m. when all this started going down. It was an oddly shaped apartment that I lived in. He lived in a large closet. I slept on the fold out couch in the living room. It was a unique setup for sure, but it was basically a studio with a kitchen and a giant walk-in closet. He turned the walk-in closet into his bedroom. The kitchen was the kitchen, and the living area was the living area and my bedroom. But anyway, and I paid $500 a month, which seemed crazy at that point, but that place now is probably $4,000 a month. It was in Westwood. Crazy. But anyway, so he came in and, flipped on the TV, and the rest is history. I mean, I sat there and watched TV for hours. And I'm pretty sure Tom Brokaw, I'm pretty sure it was NBC. Like, no one knew what the hell was going on. People in nearby buildings in LA were assuming LA was next. Reasonable. All right, we took care of New York. Let's go take care of LA. LA is more spread out. what are the buildings that would go down? The Fox Tower, famously where I worked, and much more famously where they filmed Die Hard, was evacuated. That was certainly they thought a potential target. And it was terrorism. It was fear. People were fearing for their lives. They were in terror. They were experiencing terror, as you might expect. But the reality was we needed to figure out what the hell was going on, what we were going to do next. And of course, back in New York City at what ultimately became Ground Zero, like it was literally a fight for survival. The amount of, and of course we've all seen the videos and things of that sort, the amount of dust and smoke, I mean, ultimately there were fires, of course, and just debris, trash. I mean, it was acres and acres. I think the Freedom Tower, which has now replaced the Twin Towers, 16 acres. So at the very least, that much was covered in soot and, again, debris and dust, and probably many more city blocks in all directions. I'm straying pretty far from the point here. The point that I wanted to bring up is it's just one of those things. Again, my parents' generation was, the assassination of JFK. You could argue there are other events like that in American history or world history that you remember where you were for a long time as the Challenger explosion, but I was very young. I think I was in like first grade, second grade when that happened. So that was never a great example for me because I wasn't really aware of what was happening. Not to downplay that, that was a terrible tragedy too, but that was kind of a, poof moment in time. And then it kind of went away. Like a few hours later, we knew that, not surprisingly, all of the astronauts were dead and off to build the next space shuttle. I'm not saying that certainly the family and friends of those people weren't grieving and, still aren't grieving to this day. But with 9/11, it's like, oh my God, plane in the towers. Oh my God, another plane in the towers. Oh my God, one tower down. Oh my God, two towers down. And then fear. Who's next? What's next? What city is next? Oh, there's a plane down by the Pentagon. Oh, there's a plane down in Pennsylvania. Followed by months and months and months of cleanup. Stories of the bravery of the cleanup. Of course, and this is the other thing that I failed to mention just a minute ago. The other weird thing that I think a lot of people forget, I remember, is for a short period of time, a couple days, maybe even leading into a week or two, it was a rescue mission. There was the thought, and again, I think it was true that there were some, but there was the thought, there's hundreds of people underneath here. All the rescue dogs, and not that long ago, maybe the last couple of years, one of the last rescue dogs that was still living from 9/11 passed away. It must have been actually a handful of years ago. But, it was just like any other building collapse or fire or anything else. It's like, let's try to find some live bodies here. And the images that I never want to see and that I don't know are available are, I'm sure the dogs early on, and this is morbid to talk about, so I apologize, but it was just on my mind. I'm sure early on they were, sifting through the soot and the trash and the debris, and they'd find a hand or a foot or a leg or whatever, and it was either by itself or attached to someone who had to jump. We've all heard about the jumpers. I mean, that's got to be so disturbing, first of all, and dissuading, what's the term I'm looking for? So depressing for the rescuers to be like, oh, I see a hand, I see a foot, I see a face. Oh, it's another body. It's another body part. And this must have been happening hourly. Forget daily. Hourly, this must have been happening. That they were just, you know, hope, despair, hope, despair again. And I remember vividly there were images of the gates that had been set up in the ensuing days, probably hours, to keep the general public out. And people had posted pictures of their loved ones. You know, my daughter, my son, my husband, my wife, whatever, worked in Tower One. Here's a picture of them. Here's their name. Here's my number. Let me know if you find them, if you find them alive, that sort of thing. And I've got to imagine that, again, 98%, 99%+ of those were not happy endings. And so you just, the magnitude of the tragedy, you know, and again, the fact that, and people forget this because these are minute details that don't matter at all. The day before in New York City, a friend of mine, shout out to Dave, David, a friend of mine posted a picture on Monday night, September 10th, 2001 in New York City. It was a rainy night, overcast, crummy weather, but Tuesday morning, September 11th, 2001, boom. Crystal clear blue sky. And you put yourself in that situation, you know, in the modern age. If you have a crappy weather kind of day and the next day it's like, oh, it's sunny, it's beautiful, it's a nice fall day. Hundreds, thousands of people were off to work, happy about going to work, took the elevator up 90 floors, 100 floors, up to the top of the world, wherever that restaurant was called, you know, and having no idea that minutes later, their entire life would change or their entire life would end for so many of them. And that, by the way, that's the other thing. You know, as I think is pretty well known, the plane hit, both planes hit, somewhere between the 65th and 80th floor, I think combined between the two buildings. And so there were a lot of people in the floors beneath where the plane hit. That survived, that made it out, made it to the street, walked a few blocks away. We're probably like, I'm going to get a cup of coffee. Let this pass, you know, let this see how long this takes sort of a thing. And then we'll have to get back to work, you know, worried about that 9 o'clock meeting. Like I've put myself in that situation in my head. I don't know why, but I just have so many times. And I've wondered, like, you know, what in various spots, what would I be thinking if I was on the 95th floor, if I was on the 55th floor? Would I come down to the bottom of the towers and just kind of hang out like in the lobby? Would they let me do that? Probably not. They probably made people leave. At what point would I go, you know what? I should probably get the fuck out of here. Is it when the jumpers started? That's actually one of the things they pointed out in that 60 Minutes story. Is that, again, just, I mean, adding tragedy to tragedy, the first firefighter death, the first one, was a firefighter who was just on the ground, you know, walking over to his post, trying to do his job, and a jumper landed on him and killed him. As you might imagine, I mean, a human body falling hundreds of feet, and the person that jumped or fell, whatever you want to call it, certainly is not living. And the person they land on, unless they just barely graze them, also not going to make it. So is that the point where people are like, oh my God, I've got to get as far away from this as possible? I don't know. Again, aside from talking to survivors who were in that exact situation, for which there are several thousand, we may never know exactly how all of that was handled and when things went from, wow, this is crazy, to, oh my God, I got to survive, to, oh my God, I've really got to survive. I've got to get out of here. I'm covered in dust, you know, all that sort of stuff. But I think the reason I want to talk about this is it was on my mind. I watched that special, like I said, just a couple of nights ago. And one of the things that one of the dispatchers, one of the female firefighters who they interviewed talked about was, you know, she talked about how in her culture, she was an African-American woman. She said in African-American culture, you keep people's memory alive by speaking their name. And she mentioned the name. I forget the guy's name, but of the guy who switched assignments with her for whatever reason. I don't remember exactly what he ended up doing, what she was going to be doing, and he ended up doing, I don't know. But long story short, he died on 9/11 and she didn't. Again, you know, maybe it was he took the morning shift, she took the afternoon, she took dispatch, and he was on, you know, active duty. I don't know. I'm making up the terms. But so she kept speaking his name. And then she said, which I thought was very poignant, she was like, I don't want this to be another page in a history book that's just turned. And I obviously haven't been in high school or college for a couple decades now, but I cannot imagine that that will happen or would ever happen. I don't know how much of a history book, a U.S. history book, would be dedicated to this. You know, we still got to go through all the people wearing white wigs and the 18th century, the 19th century, and 20th century, and presidents and laws and, you know, constitution, all sorts of stuff. That's all important. You got to know all that. But at some point, you get to the modern age, the 21st century, and I don't know what else you're talking about than other than this, when you're referring to 21st century events. What else is there? This is our JFK assassination. This is the thing that, until the day I die, I hope is the most memorable national event that I live through. You know, and it, again, I don't suspect that it's the sort of thing that will ever be forgotten, but you just never know sometimes. You really don't. So I hope that woman is right and that it's not ever forgotten. I hope that people of all ages, whether you were alive or not, never forget it and never forget the impact that it had on our society. You know, unfortunately, there were terroristic events before that, and there have been terroristic events since that. You know, and they seem to get, unfortunately, they seem to get more varied by type and style. And I would also say, in terms of what is classified as terrorism, they get more, you know, there's a higher volume of them as time has marched on. And that, of course, is quite unfortunate, but that's just where we are in our society. So, I wanted to talk about it. I wanted to, you know, if anyone else has any thoughts, what was your memory of 9/11? What were you doing that day, that morning? Did your day essentially stop? I think about if it was a year later or any year after that, I would have been at work. Would I have been sent home? Let's say I wasn't in a tall building. Would I have been expected to just keep working while New York City is, at that point in time, I'm sure this term was used a lot, under attack? Because it was under attack. Not ongoing, but it was under attack. For sure. You can't really deny that. So would it have just been, you know, would I have been expected to continue with a normal day? All I can say is, if God forbid it happened again, I would not expect my employees to go on like a normal day. I don't know how you possibly could. That's insane to me. So, yeah, it's just something that I hope is never forgotten. Again, it's strange to me. Every year, I guess there's no better term than death-iversary. I have a couple that stand out to me that I remember. The death of my mother certainly being one of them. And the death of my first dog when we got here to Colorado, who died from cancer. I probably talked about it on the show, but she was only 3 years old. And I, like, I, at the very least, I take a moment for myself and just try to reflect and remember the good memories from both of those beings on those days. But I also very much struggle with it. Like, it's not that I'm celebrating them. I'm just remembering them. And like I said, I'm taking a moment for myself to think about them. And look, at I think about my mom and Luna was the name of the dog. I think about my mom and Luna at least for a moment, literally every day. So it's not that unusual for me to stop and think about them on the day that they passed, which is why I try to do it a little longer than just a brief moment to myself. But I also think that it's important. I think it's important to do. I think it's important to just continue. And if only because if you don't, let's say I went 5-10 years and didn't think about my mom or Luna or anyone in my life that has passed, would I slowly forget what they looked like, what they smelled like, you know, all those things that trigger memories about a thing or a person or an event? Would you start to lose those touch points from the five senses? I think you might. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to lose those memories. And maybe they'll go away no matter how much I try to remember them. And certainly in the modern age, you know, unfortunately, I don't have hardly any, if any, honestly, pictures of my mom on my phone. But I have tons of pictures of Luna. And I have even more pictures of Stella, my current dog, sleeping at my feet. And my wife and my daughter and all that. And that's great. So the likelihood of forgetting what someone physically looks like is much, much, much lower in the modern age because of cell phones and, you know, having ample photos available at your fingertips. But that, you know, before a certain point, that's not a thing. And that's just pictures. That's great. But that's not everything. That's not the memories. That's not, you know, the bark of Luna, the voice of my mom. Are these things that, you know, I probably have a couple of videos of Luna chortling or barking or whatever. I don't personally have, my brother probably, Todd probably has some. I don't think I personally have a single video of my mother. So like, you have to, and again, I probably do it anyway, but you have to kind of do these self-reflections for situations like that, because otherwise you're not going to be able to cue up those memories and bring them to the forefront of your mind whenever you want. But so I guess the point is I'm hoping that, you know, stuff like this podcast, I'm sure there are plenty of podcasts out there. There's probably podcasts specifically about 9/11. That wouldn't shock me at all. There's also probably podcasts where people are doing exactly what I'm doing, just kind of reflecting specifically around the date every year, the anniversary date. But Stella's making loud snoring noises underneath me here. But you know, you don't want to lose that memory. You want to keep speaking it. And like that woman said, you know, that's how you honor their memory and honor the loss that is by continuing to talk about them and keep them in the forefront of people's minds. So just wanted to get on and talk about that. It hit me while I was watching it. I was like, I just need to speak about this. So I did. Let me know what your thoughts are, as I mentioned, your memories. What were you doing on 9/11? Maybe you can answer that question I had. If you were working in a building that had any elevation whatsoever, were you sent home? We sent home. It was a Tuesday that it happened. 9/11/2001 was a Tuesday. Were you sent home for the rest of the week, just for the day? Like, again, I was at that point unemployed. I'd been living in LA for a couple months, but the last job I'd had was a temp job, and it had ended. So I was able to just watch wall-to-wall news coverage for days, and I did. I was enraptured by it. I don't know what other people were doing, specifically other people that were right there, you know, that were in that area, whether it's actually Manhattan or just the New York, New Jersey area, you know. So I'd be keen to know that. Let me know what your thoughts are on that. So, and you can do that by sending us an email at bropodnetwork@gmail.com. The bropodnetwork, actually, at gmail.com. The bropodnetwork@gmail.com. Check out our website, bropodnetwork.com. And yeah, I'm actually off on a quick vacation the next few days, going to Vegas with the boys. So that's going to be a good time as you're hearing this. But yeah, like I said, we'll be back next week. Todd and I almost certainly, unless there's an unforeseen hiccup in Todd's schedule, but should be Todd and I back next week for the Mothership Pod coming back at you. So yeah, thanks for listening. As always, this has been Scott Speaks, the 9/11 Chronicles. Thanks as always for listening. And until next week, everybody.